Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by a great many people. I'd like to especially recognize the Celtic Clan, who will be providing all of our music this morning, and Sandy Eaglin, who has once again transformed a story into our play, and all of the people who are helping with their time and their talent to bring it to life for us today.
As we light our chalice this day, may we notice the changes that are happening around us. The days of light grow shorter, and the darkness is longer, and soon the winter solstice will be upon us. May we relish in this time of quietude. The Celtic people charted the rhythms of the day with the special blessings for getting up, cooking, working in the fields, and tending the fire. May we honor the time of winter solstice by giving a blessing of our own.
Our story this morning was written by Francis Brown. Frances Brown was born in the early 1800s in Ireland. She was the seventh of 12 children, and she was born blind. She really wanted to further her education, and there weren't a lot of opportunities for young blind little girls in Ireland in the early 1800s, especially from such big families. So what she did was work out a deal with her siblings, and she made a trade with them. She would do their chores if they would read their lessons out loud to her. And by this method, young Frances received an education of her own. And she would think up poems in her mind, which as a young adult, she would get her siblings to write down for her. And her poems began to attract attention. And in time, she found someone who wanted to commission her to make her living by having her stories written down. Several of her stories were collected into a book called Granny's Wonderful Chair, and our story this morning comes from that collection.
The Christmas Cuckoo. Once upon a time, there stood in the midst of a bleak moor in the North Country a certain village. All the inhabitants were poor, for their fields were barren, and they had little trade. But the poorest of them all were two brothers called Scrub and Spare, who followed the cobbler's craft.
Their hut was built of clay and wattles. The door was low and all was open, for there were no windows. The roof did not entirely keep the rain out, and the only thing comfortable was a wide fireplace, for which the brothers could never find enough firewood to make a sufficient fire. There they worked in most brotherly friendship, though with little encouragement.
On one unlucky day, a new cobbler arrived in the village from the capital city of the kingdom, where he had cobbled for the queen and the princesses. His awls were sharp, his lasts were new, and he set up a stall in a neat cottage with two windows.
Brother, brother, a terrible calamity has befallen us. One patch of the new cobbler's outwears two of ours. Our customers are deserting us.
Oh, my brother, all the cobbling business is leaving us and going to the new cobbler. What shall we do? How will we live?
The season had been wet and cold. The barley did not ripen well, and the cabbages rotted in the garden.
So the brothers were poor that winter. When Christmas came, the snow was very deep, and they could get no firewood.
Scrub, it is Christmas, but we are cold and so alone.
And we have nothing to eat but a barley loaf and a piece of rusty bacon.
Their hut stood at the end of the village. Beyond it spread the bleak moor, now all white and silent.
But that moor had once been a forest. Great roots of old trees were still to be found in it, loosened from the soil and laid bare by the winds and the rain. One of these, a rough, gnarled log, lay near their door, the half of it above the snow.
Scrub, shall we sit here cold on Christmas while the great root lies yonder? Let us chop it up for firewood. The work will make us warm.
No, it's not right to chop wood on Christmas. Besides, that root is too hard to be broken with our hatchet.
Hard or not, we must have fire. Come, brother, help me with it. Poor as we are, there is nobody in the village who will have such a Yule log as ours.
Scrub liked a little grandeur, and in hopes of having a fine Yule log, agreed. So, both brothers strained and strove with all their might. Between pulling and pushing, the great old root was at last safe on the hearth and began to crackle and blaze with red embers.
This is indeed wonderful. Let us enjoy our bread and bacon.
Yes, Scrub, let us be grateful for what we have.
The door was shut, for there was nothing but cold moonlight and snow outside. But the hut, strewn with fir boughs and ornamented with holly, looked cheerful as the ruddy blaze flared up and rejoiced their hearts.
Then suddenly, from out of the blazing root, they heard a voice.
Cuckoo, cuckoo.
As plain as possible, the spring bird's voice came over the moor like it was a May morning.
What is that? I think it's something very bad. Should we try to run away?
Brother, I am frightened too, but perhaps it will be something good. This is the Christmas season after all. Let us not despair until we find out what has come.
Now let's see what visitation has come to our two frightened brothers, Scrub and Spare.
Cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo.
Suddenly, out of the deep hole at the side of the roof, which the fire had not yet reached, flew a large cuckoo. She lit on the table before Spare and Scrub and spoke.
Good gentlemen, what season is this?
Why, it's Christmas.
Why, yes, yes, Mistress Cuckoo, it's Christmas time.
Well, then, a Merry Christmas to you both. I went to sleep in the old hollow of that old root one evening and never woke to the heat of your fire and made me think it was summer again. But now, since you have burned my lodging, let me stay in your hut till spring comes round. I only want a hole to sleep in, and when I go on my journey travels next summer, be assured I will bring you some present for your travel.
Scrub sat speechless, but Spare responded warmly.
Stay and welcome. I'll make you a good warm hole in the thatch. But you must be hungry after that long sleep. Here is a slice of barley bread. Come help us to keep Christmas.
Yes, indeed, Mistress Cuckoo. Please join us in our celebration.
Why, thank you, you are most kind.
So the cuckoo ate up the slice of the bread, drank water from a brown jug, and flew into a snug hole, which Spare scooped for it in the thatch of the hut.
Scrub was afraid that the cuckoo might be unlucky, but as it slept on and the days passed uneventfully, he forgot his fears.
So the snow melted, the rains came, and the days, they lengthened.
Then, one sunny morning, the brothers were awakened by the cuckoo shouting its song to let them know that spring had come.
Cuckoo, cuckoo, wake up, wake up! Today is the day! Now I am going on my travels over the world to tell all men of the spring. There is no country where trees bud or flowers bloom that I will not sing in before the year goes round. Give me another slice of barley bread to help me on my journey, and tell me what present I shall bring you at the 12 months' end.
Scrub would have been angry with his brother for cutting so large a bread slice, their store being so low, but his mind was too occupied with what present it would be most prudent to ask for.
Well now, gracious cuckoo, let me think.
Mistress Cuckoo, your company through this long winter has been our greatest gift. Don't feel you must give us anything.
Brother, brother, don't be so hasty. If Cuckoo really wants to reward us, who are we to deny her that pleasure?
Yes, please. It would be my great pleasure to give you something special for your hospitality. There are two trees that lies by the well that lies by the world's end. One of them is called the golden tree, for its leaves are all of beaten gold. Every winter they fall into the well with the sound of scattered coins. The other tree is always green like a laurel. Some call it the wise tree, and some call it the merry tree. Its leaves never fall, but they that get one of them are able to keep a blithe, happy heart in face of all misfortunes. They can make themselves as merry in a hut as in a palace.
Oh, good, Mistress Cuckoo. Please bring me a leaf off that tree.
Now, brother, don't be such a fool. Think of what we could buy with the leaves of beaten gold. Dear Mistress Cuckoo, bring one of those to me.
Of course. I will happily bring you each what you have asked for.
The time is on the way. It's a time of anticipation. And it can be hard to settle down with so much happiness and joy and bustling around us. But it's important to take the time so that we can connect to the deeper chords of the season. And silence is one way that we can do that. So we'll take a few moments to sit together in silence now. It will help you, if you're holding things in your hands, to put them down and to make yourself comfortable. And it may help you also to focus on your breathing as you breathe in and as you breathe out. Notice that you're breathing. And it might help you to count your breaths, to focus your mind, so that you can listen. And when you're listening, you might notice your connections to your breath, to everybody in this room, to the sounds beyond this church, and ultimately to all that is our life. So we'll be silent for a few moments together.
Please join me in a participatory prayer. I will say a phrase, and after that, you will say, "May we be blessed." To be blessed is to be oneself a blessing. May we be blessed. To bless is to put a bit of yourself into something. May we be blessed. Blessing is the lifeblood throbbing through the universe. When we bless others, we offer them refuge from an indifferent world.
The Christmas Cuckoo, Part 2.
Scrub and Scare were poorer than ever that year after the cuckoo left. Nobody would give them a single shoe to mend. They sowed their barley, planted their cabbages, and now their trade was gone, worked in the rich villagers' fields to eke out a scanty living.
So the seasons came and passed. Spring, summer, harvest, and winter followed each other as they have always done. Scrub and Spare grew so poor and ragged that their old neighbors did not invite them to wedding feasts or merrymakings, and the brothers thought the cuckoo had forgotten them too.
But at daybreak on the 1st of April, Scrub and Spare heard a hard beak knocking at their door. And a voice crying out,
"Cuckoo, cuckoo, let me with my presents."
"Presents, presents, please come in."
"Oh yes, dear friend, we are so pleased to see you again. Welcome."
So in came the cuckoo, carrying on one side a golden leaf, larger than that of any tree in the North Country, and on the other side, one that was a fresh and beautiful green.
"How wonderful to see you both again, and I have brought the gifts I promised you. Scrub, here is your leaf of gold."
"Thank you."
"And Spare, here is your leaf of green from the merry tree. Well, it has been a long journey from the world's end. Please give me a slice of barley bread, for I must tell the North Country that the spring has come."
Even Scrub did not begrudge the thickness of that slice, though it was cut from their last loaf. So much gold had never been in Scrub's hands before, and he could not help exulting over it to his brother.
"See the wisdom of my choice, brother. Is this leaf of gold not wonderful? As for your leaf, as good might be plucked from any hedge. I wonder a sensible bird would carry the like so far."
good, Master Cobbler. Your conclusions are more hasty than courteous. But, Master Spare, if you are disappointed with your green leaf, I go on the same journey every year. And for your hospitality, we'll think it no trouble to bring each of you whichever leaf you desire.
Oh, no, dear Cuckoo. This leaf from the Merry Tree suits me best. I am most grateful. Many thanks to you, friend Cuckoo. Please bring me another from the Merry Tree.
Most gracious Cuckoo, please bring me another golden one.
As you both wish. Goodbye, my friends.
Away flew the cuckoo.
This is the feast of all fools, and it ought to be your birthday, Spare. Did ever man fling away such an opportunity of getting rich? Much good your merry leaves will do in the midst of all this rags and poverty.
But Spare laughed at him and answered with quaint old proverbs concerning the cares that come with gold. Till Scrub, at length getting angry, vowed his brother was not fit to live with a respectable man. And taking his last, his alls, and his golden leaf, he left the warm hut, the wattle hut, and he went to tell the villagers what had happened.
They were astonished at the folly of Spare and complimented Scrub's good sense, particularly when he showed them the golden leaf and said that the cuckoo would bring him one every spring.
The new cobbler immediately took Scrub into partnership, and the villagers all sent him their shoes to mend. Fairfeather, a beautiful village maiden, smiled graciously upon him. And in the course of that summer, they were married with a grand wedding feast at which the whole village danced.
Except Spare. He was not invited. The bride could not bear his low-mindedness, and his brother thought him a disgrace to the family.
Scrub established himself with Fairfeather in a cottage which was close by that of the new cobbler, and quite as fine. He mended shoes to everybody's satisfaction. He had a scarlet coat and a fat goose for dinner on holidays.
Fairfeather had a crimson gown and fine blue ribbons, but neither she nor Spare was quite content. For to buy this grandeur, the golden leaf had to be broken and parted with, piece by piece. And the last bit was gone before the cuckoo came with another.
Spare lived on in the old hut and worked in the cabbage garden and the barley field. Every day, Spare's coat grew more ragged and the hut more weather-beaten. But people remarked that he somehow never looked sad or sour. And the wonder was that from the time anyone began to keep his company, he, or she too, grew happier, kinder, and more content. The Christmas Cuckoo Conclusion.
Every 1st of April, the cuckoo continued to tap at the brother's door with a golden leaf for Scrub and a green for Spare. Fairfeather would have entertained the bird nobly with wheaten bread and honey, for she had the notion of persuading it to bring two golden leaves instead of one, but Cuckoo flew away from her to eat barley bread with Spare.
Scrub and Fairfeather for their kind offer. But you see, cuckoos are not fit company for fine people. At any rate, I very much like your old hut where I sleep so snugly from Christmas till spring.
And Scrub spent his golden leaves and remained always discontented. Spare kept his merry ones and was happy. Many years passed in this manner when a certain lord came to the village.
His castle on the moor was ancient and strong, with high towers and a deep moat. All the country, as far as he could see from the highest turret, belonged to the lord, but he had not been to the village for 20 years and would not have come at all, except that he was melancholy. He arrived in a very bad temper. The servants said nothing would please him, and the villagers put on their worst clothes, lest he raise their rents.
But one day in the harvest time, the lord chanced to meet Spare, gathering watercress at a meadow stream, and fell into talk with the cobbler. How it was, nobody could tell, but from that hour, the great lord cast away his melancholy. He forgot all his woes. He went hunting, fishing, making merry in his hall, where all travelers were invited in, and all the poor were welcome.
As this strange story spread through the North Country, a great array of company began to come to the cobbler's hut. Rich men who had lost their money, poor men who had lost their friends, beauties who had grown old, and all who had lost something important to them.
The rich gave Spare presents. The poor gave him thanks. Spare's coat ceased to be ragged. He had bacon with his cabbage and bread. All came to talk with Spare, and whatever their troubles had been, all went home merry.
By this time, his fame had reached the capital city and even the court. There were a great many discontented people there, and the king had lately fallen into ill humor because a neighboring princess with seven islands for her dowry would not marry his eldest son. So a royal messenger was sent to Spare with a command that he should come to court immediately.
Tomorrow is the 1st of April, so my liege, I will go with you 2 hours after sunrise.
The messenger lodged in the village all night, and the cuckoo came at sunrise.
Cuckoo, cuckoo, hello, friend.
Friend Cuckoo, welcome, welcome. I am sorry, but I must go on a journey at the king's command. He summons me to the court. Will you join me?
Court is a fine place, but I cannot go there. I would love to accompany you, but they would lay snares and catch me. So be careful of the leaves I have brought you, and please give me a farewell slice of barley bread.
Spare was sorry to part with the cuckoo's company, but he gave her a slice that was thick and large. And having sewed up the leaves in the lining of his leather doublet, he set out with the messenger for court.
His coming caused great surprise there. Everybody wondered what the king could see in such a common man, but scarcely had his majesty conversed with Spare half an hour when the princess and her seven islands were forgotten, and orders given that a feast for all comers should be spread in the banquet hall. Everyone found themselves to be most merry.
From that time forward, mighty princes, great lords and ladies, ministers of state, all sought out Spare's company, and the more they talked with him, the lighter and kinder grew their hearts.
Such changes had never before been seen at court. The lords forgot their spites, the ladies their envies, the princes and ministers of state made friends with each other, and the judges showed fairness to all. As for Spare, he was given a chamber in the palace and a seat at the king's table. Many sent him rich robes or costly jewels, but in the midst of all the court's grandeur, he still wore his leather doublet. He often invited his brother and Fairfeather and his old friends to the village to visit him at the palace and warmly entertained them the Christmas season.
And most importantly, he always set aside time to return to his humble cottage, to visit with his old friend Cuckoo, and to offer her his gratitude and the best of the bounty of his new life. From then on, through all seasons, Spare lived to be a good and honored man who continued to make all others merry and content until the end of his happy days. The end.
The end.
The end.
How many of you have seen Charlie Brown's Christmas special? Well, then most of you know that there is a time in the special when Charlie Brown asks, "Can anybody tell me what Christmas is all about?" He asks the question filled with frustration, and he's frustrated because all he can see is the shopping and the presents and the party and the tinsel, and he feels like Christmas has to be about something more. I bet some of you have felt that way from time to time. I know I have, and I know that a lot of people who have lived long before us have struggled with similar feelings too. Part of the reason that it can get confusing for us is because of the way that Christmas has developed. The Christmas traditions that we keep today are like a tightly braided blend of winter solstice and Christmas traditions that are both sacred and secular from a long, long time ago, and they're so tightly braided together that it's hard to tell exactly where they came from. There are sacred rituals of the season, we know that. Sacred rituals include the burning of the Yule log on winter solstice and church services to celebrate the birth of Jesus on Christmas Eve. These rituals invite us to slow down and pay attention to something greater than our own desires and wishes. The ritual celebration of the return of the light in the midst of winter dark is a chance to ponder the necessity of light and dark and the blessedness of the balance between the two. It provides us a time to ponder our connections with people across all time, and it invites us to remember with humility our rightful place in the universe. Likewise, the ritual celebration of the birth of Jesus is a chance to celebrate the extravagant gift of God's love. It's a chance to ponder the power of the story. God so loved the world that God became human with all of the pains and sorrows and joys and hungers that being human entails. And it invites us to remember with humility our power to choose whether or not we will aspire to follow the lessons of God's love. These are the spiritual gifts of the season. And the story we heard today of the Christmas cuckoo stands in that tradition. It helps us with spiritual meaning making by lifting up values like generosity, hospitality, simplicity, and contentment. Side by side with those sacred stories and sacred rituals are the secular festivals of the season. These include a wide variety of traditions centered around parties and eating and drinking and music and dancing and plays. You might not have heard of them, but mummers' plays are a good example of this tradition of festival in the Christmas winter solstice season. It's hard to tell exactly where they came from, but mummers' plays became very, very popular across many places in Europe in the middle of the 17th century, and they were especially held in England and Scotland and Wales and Ireland. They were examples of theater that drew on earlier theater forms from the Middle Ages in Europe. And they were folk plays performed by ordinary people. Sometimes people would have access to a theater or some hall where they could perform them for a large group of people, but most often they were just performed on the street by ordinary people wearing whatever costumes they could find. These plays had stock characters, including a villain and a hero and a doctor and a fool, and they featured over-the-top play fighting. In the Christmas season, these plays were an opportunity for people to just have fun together. They were about revelry. And these plays were about being outrageous. The more outrageous, the better, for the greater fun the people would have. They were also sometimes used as a way for poor people to get the rich people in the village to give them extra treats. And you can hear a little bit of that in the song that we'll hear for the offertory with lines demanding figgy pudding and declaring that they won't go until they get some. So the traditions that we keep today, the songs that we sing, are a blend of these secular traditions about play and revelry and sacred traditions about the spiritual meaning of the season. And sometimes the pendulum across time has swung too far in one direction or another. So the Puritans, for example, when they came to this country, they wanted nothing to do with Christmas. They thought Christmas was basically an excuse for a great big party. And they thought that people partied to excess, and so they tried to put a damper on all that and convert Christmas into a strictly religious holiday where all you would do would be go to church, the end, period, nothing else. Years later, the Unitarians of the 19th century saw that that spirit of revelry was hard to quench, and they also thought the partying was a little too wild at this season, so they collaborated with a whole host of people in the culture who wanted to convert that spirit into something more respectable. And so the Unitarians of the 19th century helped reinvent Christmas once again. They helped spread the tradition of having a Christmas tree, for example, and they helped encourage people to stay home on Christmas. Instead of going out to party in the streets, they encouraged them to stay home and celebrate with their children by giving them gifts. And they helped spread that practice. and of encouraging gift-giving as an expression of generosity at this season. Their efforts helped balance out the emphasis on so much play and festival. In our own time, many people say that the pendulum has swung too far again, this time in the direction of shopping and buying. Charlie Brown has that to say in his Christmas special. Presents are fun, we know, but there's more to the season than that. And so my invitation to you today is to find a way to create balance in your own life, in your own heart, in your own celebration of the season. Enjoy the parties and the feasting and the toys. Have fun in your playtime. And then make sure you balance it out with some time for contemplating the reason for these holidays you keep and the message of the stories behind them. Take some time to slow down and really consider the message that the stories have for you. Let your heart be opened by the values of generosity and hospitality. Let yourself be moved by the wonder of light returning or the wonder of divinity incarnate in humanity. Just as much as play, these too are the gifts of the season. So let all of our hearts prepare them room.
Good morrow, friends and neighbors dear. Good morrow.
Good morrow. Good morrow.
We are right glad to meet you here. Christmas comes but once a year, but when it comes, it brings good cheer. So we are come to act our merriment in here. We are the merry actors that traverse the street. We are the merry actors that fight for our meat. Swish, swish. We are the merry actors that show pleasant play. Stand forth, St. George, thou champion, and clear the way.
I am St. George from good old England sprung. My famous name throughout the world hath rung. Famous name,
yay!
Rung.
Yay!
Thank you one and all, thank you one and all. Many bloody deeds and wonders have I shown and made false tyrants tremble on their throne. Far have I roamed, oft have I fought, and little do I rest. And now I'll slay that dragon bold. Swoosh, swoosh. Thank you. And my wonders to begin. A felon fiery dragon he, but I will clip his wing. Ha! Ha! Dragon, but you do not frighten me. Come here, dragon. I will be done with ye.
Who is it seeks the dragon's blood and calls so angry and so loud?
Ha!
That English dog who looks so proud.
Dog?
Yes. I can catch him in my claw. With my long teeth and horrid jaw.
Horrid, horrid, remember that.
Of such I break up half a score to stay my appetite for more. Marrow from his bones I'll squeeze and suck his blood up by degrees.
Celsius or Fahrenheit?
Fahrenheit!
Ah,
be done with you!
Hey! And now you die, dragon! Ha! Oh, come on now! I said you will...
I die!
That's right, you die!
I die!
All right then, die!
I die!
I swore I may need it again. What do you think this is? Pulp Fiction? Thank you.
I'm not dead.
No!
I just
Harlow.
I am St. George, that worthy champion bold. With my sword, I won the king of Egypt's daughter and 3 crowns of gold. Thank you. Thank you.
Come on, dragon.
Our service is done, but the day awaits. Let yourself be open to the gifts of the season, so that the season may not be just a moment in time, but live into the new year. Go in peace.